This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the foot moulding voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew. How are we?
Not too bad, my friend. How are you? How are your feet?
Feet are good. Feet are, I'd say, misshapen now. Is that the word? I think it is the word. Like most ex-footballers, most ex-goalkeepers, where all the toes kind of point in into the shape of a boot, but then similarly, you would have the boot the shape as your foot, of course.
So what's the deal here? So I'm referring to a story that you told me the other day about wearing your boots in the bath, which I wasn't too uncomfortable. I was aware of this concept. And when you're younger, you tend to do it because you hear these stories about how you want the boots to mold to your feet. But you continued it as a professional.
I did. Yeah. So I was measured, I think, as a size, something like 11 and a half or 11. I was measured when I was younger. But then I sort of realized that certainly when striking a football, it was that little bit more difficult, it felt, with the bigger boots. So I remember I tried a smaller pair and it destroyed my feet, but I did feel a slight improvement in terms of striking the ball, which I guess there's some logic behind it. By the way, before I talk about this, I probably should put a disclaimer out for any kids listening in. Do not take my advice on board, because I'll get lots of angry parents calling me, no doubt. But there was just something about it. I saw a lot of people that were striking footballs and striking them incredibly well. And the ones that I'd heard of that had bigger feet struggled a bit. Mark Bosnich was a great example. I remember hearing he was a size 12 or 13, and he did struggle. I mean, for the fantastic attributes he had and top keeper that he was, one of the areas he did struggle a bit was striking the ball that little bit longer. So I did experiment a bit with trying boots with that bit smaller. But of course, initially, as I say, it's very painful. They didn't feel all that good. So then I used to wear them in the bath in, you know, really hot water. Then once I'd finished wearing them and got out the bath, I'd then stuff them with newspaper or something in order to make them that little bit more malleable. And yeah, I did that throughout my career. I don't know if lads do it now, because it feels like it's changed a bit and that a lot of the boot companies make the boots pretty much bang on to the shape of a player's foot. You know, and I hear all the stories about a lot of the Premier League lads that will have essentially different boots for each game. It's not quite the case in the Championship, but I do wonder whether they still do that now or whether the boots are fitted that little bit better.
I think they are, aren't they? Aren't they specifically moulded for a player's feet? Unfortunately, I suppose you, Richard Lee, were you not a big enough name for Adidas or Nike or any other manufacturer to get you in to their factories to mould that thing around your foot?
No, believe it or not, no. And no, now you say it makes me very sad to think that I never quite got to the level that I got a foot mould. That would have been, I think that's when you know you've made it. If you are having your foot moulded and they are making a boot according to your foot, I think that's the moment. But no, I didn't ever get to that level. They did supply boots for a period of time until, and it is funny, it was literally the day I joined Brentford, suddenly the boot orders dried up. And it's got even worse now. So I remember back then, certainly if you were playing professionally, the likes of Nike and Adidas would look after you. But now they've gone really top end. You know, you have to be a top end Premier League player, at which point you will get free boots or potentially a sponsorship. But anything below that now, Championship, and goalkeepers even less so. That's an interesting fact for you. Very few goalkeepers, because it's not seen as maybe as an attractive position, you won't get as many sponsorships, or certainly the sponsorships won't be of the level of outfield players.
It's funny, isn't it? That's kind of a myth now, that people assume footballers in all levels of the professional game get given football boots. Here you go, it's a pair of free boots. And I think even young footballers, I think, go into football thinking that that's the case as well, that they will just be given free boots, but it's absolutely not.
No. What you tend to find now is a lot of agents will take it on and will, you know, suggest that they will supply boots. But ordinarily what happens is they just buy the boots. They won't tell the player necessarily. But of course, it's, you know, you look at the brands I mentioned and some of the bigger brands that provide boots, they have to ask themselves a question whether they're getting much benefit from supplying a League One, League Two player, even Championship player. So they have really tightened up. You find that glove companies are that little bit more generous, but even glove companies now, I think the way of the world over the last couple of years, a lot of companies are really tightening up, and the sponsorships will only go to the lads at the very top. And then below that, you're having to buy your own product.
What did you wear just to finish this? What boots?
So boots, I was Nike initially, but then I did transition to Adidas. And actually, I did write about this in my book, Matthew. I'm surprised you haven't brought that up. I did write about this in detail because I then went for the combo of the white Adidas boots with just white gloves. They weren't the actual combo. Whereas now you see a lot of the lads, whether it be Adidas, Nike, or of course you've got so many fantastic glove brands, Cells, One Glove, AB1, etc. Callier, I see you're making a big play, GK Icon. There's plenty of glove brands out there, but obviously where I suppose Adidas and Nike will have a bit of an edge for the lad that wants to have that sort of style with the combo of the boots and gloves, you are seeing now a lot that will hook up.
Will what, sorry?
They'll have the hookup. Yeah, they'll have the boots and the gloves that match. They'll have the combo. I'm sure hookup is the expression. Again, this is where we need Twitter. If we had Twitter, we could put this out and find out what the actual expression is. But I'm sure it is when you've got the boots and gloves that match.
Oh, okay. I've never heard that. I hookup is if they are being hooked up by a manufacturer who's hooking them up with the boots.
Okay. No, I think I'm also referring, so when I was involved in headwear, that was always the thing. It was then hooking up the cap with the trainer. So I'm assuming it's exactly the same for boots and gloves.
Okay, matching is what I would say, to be honest.
There you go, old school, matching.
And I never did wear my boots, just to round this off. I never wore my boots in the bath, but I did used to take them into the shower after the game. I don't know whether that was common in professional football. I'd take them into the shower. And then on the advice of non-league footballers, when I used to go to those Bisham Abbey soccer schools in the summer, they'd always say, do not put your boots in the airing cupboard because they'll come out resembling polystyrene. Stuff them, like you said, stuff them with newspaper. So you'd stuff them with newspaper and then wrap them in newspaper and then I'd pop them on the radiator. But I don't think I should have done that. You shouldn't put them on the radiator, should you, like gloves, because it dries them right out.
Yeah, you've done everything bang on right until that final step and ruined all your hard work. And I was the same with gloves. Every day after training, took the gloves in the shower, give them a nice rinse out, and then it's that nice feeling when you then wear them the next day and they're quite supple.
So before we get on with the show, we've got plenty coming up as per. I noticed the other day I was going through my emails, the Goalkeepers Union emails, just to tidy it up. And somehow I've missed a whole chunk of emails that we've had in. They've gone into some hidden folder that I must have put them into, but I've forgotten that I've done that. So we've got a ream of emails. So apologies to anybody who's emailed us in over the past year or so that we haven't read out on the show. However, I'm going to get through them slowly but surely, okay?
Okay. What, all today or over the coming weeks?
No. Okay. We've already spoken for quite a while, so I'm going to do a very quick one now. I've got two emails that were sent in quick succession from a Vic Paul who wants to know, Richard, which coach arranged your entry into the Watford Academy? And then also, what age you reached 6 foot? Now, Vic, I can answer that. 38.
You haven't quite reached it yet, Vic. I'm getting there. How did I get in? So my story, everyone's got their own story that, you know, has ended up playing professional football. Mine was a scout came to watch a local game when I was 10 years old. We won the game 10-0 and I barely touched the ball. Thankfully, at the end, he offered a few trials to lads in our team, and thankfully the manager made a real point of saying, you know, you need to look at the goalkeeper as well. So it was one of the development centres that I then went to, and from memory, the first session, there must have been 70 kids there. It was just mayhem, and there was a load of goalies, but thankfully they had a load of games going on, and thankfully I made a save or two, and it was as simple as that. Then that became then a weekly thing, going to the development centres, and I think at the age of 12, I then was offered the chance to go to the academy, which was in Watford itself. So the development centre was like a local satellite centre, and then I think it was at 12, 13, I then went to the actual academy itself, and then progressed through the age groups year by year, basically. I think it's changed a bit now, like certainly even with Watford, I don't think they have that satellite centre anymore. So you see that where there are certain clubs that will target certain areas, but of course very few do it, I suppose, specific to goalkeeping. And this is where there isn't really a right or wrong way. The advice I'll always give anyone that thinks their son or daughter is worthy of a trial is actually a lot of the time making contact with clubs. If you can get some footage together, that's always good for the clubs to get a bit of a visual, but then actually just making contact with the clubs and, you know, trying to reach out to someone that will maybe have a look at the footage or the CV that you've got and just see if they'll offer a trial.
and the 6 foot thing. Are you 6 foot
no,
now?
I was.
Not?
Do you know what I was? And this is true. I'm 6 foot in the morning, but by the end of the day, I'm not 6 foot because you shrink a little bit during the day.
I've never heard this before.
This is true. You shrink because I think it's something to do with your spine compresses like about, you know, 2 or 3 millimeters, like a centimeter or so during the day. And because of that, I'm 183 centimeters in the morning. I think I'm 182 in the evening. And so, yeah, right now I'm 6 foot. At this point of recording, I'm 6 foot. But this evening, I'll lose several inches.
Okay, fine. But to answer the question, so what? We're looking at, I reckon, what, 17, 18?
Yeah, and again, everyone gets gross spurts, don't they, at different times. I mean, one of the goalkeepers that I work with, excellent young goalkeeper at Brighton, James Beadle, man of the match yesterday, actually. I went and watched his game for the under-23 at Tottenham's new stadium, which is, it is phenomenal. First time I've been there, been meaning to go, obviously, since it's open, but haven't had a chance. And yeah, it was phenomenal. But him being a good example where he was, I want to say, 6 foot at the age of 16. He's now 17, soon to turn 18, and he's 6'5", 6'6". So he's grown a good 5 to 6 inches in the last year or so at the age of 16, 17. So it's different. I think I peaked around, must have been around 16. I felt that I was, on the verge of 6 foot then. Didn't really grow too much after that. But as I say, everyone's different. And I think I'm right in saying that ordinarily you can grow up to your 20-odd. Is that about right? Let's say that. Let's just make that up and turn it into a fact.
Lovely. Vic, thank you for those messages. If you'd like to get in touch with us, very easy to do so. Although it might not be read out for another year, but we'll get there eventually. Hello at goalkeepersunion.net on our phone number 07503673020. On with the show.
Let's do it.
So, starting in the Premier League as per, where Everton beat Chelsea 1-0, and Jordan Pickford, this is according to StatsBomb's post-shot XG. I saw this from a tweet by Matt Cheatham, who is a Sky Sports statistician. Apparently, Pickford had the performance of the season by a Premier League goalkeeper. What a game. And suddenly that narrative, Richard, it's just starting to shift again.
Yeah, a phenomenal game. It just, the thought that I had, and we'll talk about his saves in a minute, but the thought that I had is, we talk a lot about Jordan Pickford when he plays for Everton. The sort of classic cliche now, I'd say, is that people often say, oh, he's brilliant when he plays for England, and don't really talk too much about when he plays for Everton or question certain performances. But I do wonder, that point at when Pickford is very much under pressure, so when he's played those games for England, those big games when he has to produce, you know, I think of the Jorginho penalty. I remember that moment thinking, oh, we've lost, it's Jorginho that's taking it, and Pickford produces, and so many saves that he made in the Euros, in the World Cup before that, and just came into his own. I can't help but feel that he loves these situations. And I just wonder whether, because where there are moments that maybe he does switch off, loses a bit of concentration, you know, you often talk about it more so from an outfield player as opposed to a goalkeeper, where they will turn up on certain nights, but then not turn up on other nights. Now, I'm not saying that Pickford doesn't turn up, but you kind of feel that he produces his best when he absolutely needs to. It's almost as if he needs that intense pressure in order to be the goalkeeper that we've seen so often for England, and certainly saw at the weekend, and have seen at key points during his Everton career. And I just wonder whether that's a point, or there's something in that, because that's something that I've certainly noticed. But no, look, in terms of the game itself, the saves as well, they were so unique, really. The save where he's come sprinting across the line, I love for several reasons. One was the speed of reaction. Ball's hit the post and instantly he knows where it's gone, gets up so quickly, moves so fast across the goal. But it's the intelligence he shows to predict where it's likely to go. The bit where there is the most danger is at the near post. He has to go directly to the near post because that's the point at which it can cross the line the earliest. So whether he's thought about all this when he's running across the line, I doubt, because it will have been instinctive. But it's the angle at which he then sprints across, only to then have to go back on himself because the ball's then fired back across him to the far post, and the agility that he shows to get himself to his right-hand side, managed to get two gloves to it and effectively stop it dead, I thought was, it was world class. It was phenomenal.
Can we discuss the fact that he was quite far behind his line when he was scampering across his goal? This is something he's been criticised for in the past. I think there was a game against Newcastle, maybe last season or the season before. It was a last minute equaliser that they got on that occasion. And it was just over the line because he was behind the line himself, and people have called him out for that since.
Yeah, well, I think it was, for me, it was the fact that he's then approaching the ball and he's having to dive forward in order to, like I say, get to the near post. Really, so you look at it, you look back, the place in which he, I'm guessing, was trying to fire the ball would have been towards the near post, because that's the nearest point to the player striking the ball, and that's the position where, or that's the point where it would have been very hard for Jordan Pickford to get to. So it just looked to me that had he been running along the goal line, for him to then dive back on himself, which he would have had to do, to then claw it out, it probably crosses the line, whereas the angle that he actually took, if anything, his body weight is forward, his momentum's forward, he's having to dive forward, and that's what you saw. When he ended up coming back on himself, he was able then to project the ball forward ever so slightly in order to keep it out of the net. So again, whether he's thought about this, whether this is just his instinctive nature to get himself across the goal, he did it perfectly. And I think had he have actually gone across the line directly, for a start, I don't think he'd have made up quite the ground. And then whether he'd have been able to get there quick enough and get the angle of dive in order to keep the ball out, I'm not sure.
And then moments after that save, he took one in the kipper, as he said himself, a late save from Mateo Kovacic as well. A tip over from Ruben Loftus-Cheek, which would have been interesting because he was clearly impeded. I think it was Kai Havertz who was doing something or other in the box at the time. But you could just tell, couldn't you, as well, the what you're saying in terms of his attitude, he was so pent up, wasn't he? He was really responding to the crowd, which he does a lot of the time, but it just felt like it was emphasised on Saturday or Sunday.
It was. I mean, after that save we just mentioned, he had a real moment where, you know, talk about chest out, pumped, feeling confident. He had that, you know, chest out, and he was really, he was enjoying that moment, but you could tell he's in the zone. He is so fired up. And that continued. And as you say, the save he made with his face, effectively. And that's where I go back to my initial point, where I think those types of saves, he's so brave, where he just comes running out and he makes up such ground. And by the point at which there is impact with the ball, he is so big and he's so close to the player. But again, there's absolutely no regard for his personal safety. You know, that is just one where a lot of goalkeepers can relate. I know a lot of you guys listening in, you do exactly the same thing, where in that moment, you think of nothing else other than, I have to keep this ball out of the net. And you could see it, you could sense it as the ball was coming across. You could feel he's going to save this. Like, he was so quick to get there. And then he took it in the face the way he did. Instantly, my thought is that could well be concussion, because he's taken it with such force, and you can see his head move the way it did. But you also felt that there's no chance he's going to come off. And exactly like he did, it took him a minute or so to get his bearings again, and then he carried on. But yeah, I thought, you know, those two saves in particular, excellent. The tip over, you say, was a bit of a strange one. His positioning was way off, but that was due to Kai Havertz being in his vicinity. But he managed to make the save. Good save as well, low down to his right, where I just thought his positioning was good. Got himself quite low, predicting where the ball would come. A good parry out wide. I just thought it was an excellent performance. Probably not a game, when you look at the chances that you would say Everton deserved to win. You know, certainly they deserved to concede, but the fact that he kept a clean sheet, and now with it being as tight as it is down the bottom, yeah, it's turned it into a fascinating last couple of weeks of the season.
And there we have it. England's number one. England's number one, as the fans were chanting.
There you go. No, it was, look, it's not, you know, we're not going to rehash things that we spoke of before, but it is key games like this. Key games like this get remembered when it comes to England, etc. But also, this is the type of game, if Everton do stay up, you know how it is, where we won't be talking about it right now, but if they do end up staying up, it's this type of a performance that will get remembered for years to come. And that's where, in a way, for his sake, I hope that happens. But then at the same time, I'm a massive fan of Nick Pope, a big fan of Ilan Meslier and what have you. So it's, you know, but it is now, we are at that point in the season where it could well be a huge goalkeeping performance or even a goalkeeping error that decides certain things. I know we're going to talk about Serie A later in the show, which is a great example of that.
I don't know whether you saw, just to finish on this game, in that game, there was a moment between, I think it was Yerry Mina and Mason Mount, I think it was, who had a bit of a collision. Now, Anthony Gordon rushed over to try and get involved, which prompted Cesar Azpilicueta to then get involved. That prompted Seamus Coleman to get involved. At the time, Jordan Pickford, I think he just got in Azpilicueta's ear very quickly and then walked away. And then all the players waded in. It became quite the fracas, at which point Edouard Mendy kind of came over, as goalkeepers invariably do in these scenarios. Don't really get involved in the fighting, but tend to act as peacemakers. I don't know whether you heard this. The commentators, upon Mendy coming over, oh, here we go. Here come the goalkeepers, always trying to get involved. Unbelievable. No. He's come out, all these outfielders in some huge scuffle. The goalkeeper comes over, in this case, Edouard Mendy, to separate it, calm it down. Typical goalkeepers, you lot, getting involved, as they always do. You just think, wow, but cannot win on some occasions. Let's move on to three incredible stops that I spotted in the Premier League this weekend, which I felt didn't get as much love as they probably should have done. The first one, West Ham 1, Arsenal 2. Aaron Ramsdale batting away a header from a corner. Ben Foster doing quite a similar manoeuvre in Watford's home defeat to Burnley, also from a corner. And then Hugo Lloris from Patson Daka palming it onto the post, which on first, second and third glance, I didn't even see. It wasn't until the replay from behind Daka that you looked at it. Normally when you hear the commentators and they say, oh, that's it, the post, you go, no, the goalkeeper's clearly got a touch on it. But on this occasion, I didn't even see that. It wasn't until, like I said, that last replay from behind Daka that you went, oh my gosh, he saved it.
Yeah, I was exactly the same. Because it's always one of them, you ask the question. Similarly, the one that we just mentioned about Jordan Pickford, where it's hit the post and fired across the goal, you're thinking, oh, has he tipped it onto the post? Which I'm pretty certain he didn't, although he was very, very close. But this was one of them, and exactly that. It was only the one where you're behind the ball, can you actually see it? It's a good example, by the way, for a lot of, and I know a lot of you guys listening in League One, League Two, obviously you guys that play non-league as well, where that's a sort of save, where that might be your best save of the season, yet nobody will notice it. None of the fans, none of the players. And it's only because in the Premier League, you've got hundreds of cameras and you just find that one angle that's perfect that we can see it was a fingertip save. But the fact that we can see it, it has to go down as certainly for him, one of his saves of the season, because the power he shows to get across to the left, you know, explosive, to get the distance that he does, to get fingertips, because it was going in the bottom corner. It would have hit the inside of the post, no doubt, and gone in at a crucial time in the game as well at 0-0, I believe. So, yeah, massive, massive save. Aaron Ramsdale, very good. It's that one that you see quite often, corner whipped in swinging corner, glanced header that then goes towards a near post. So to have the ability and awareness to move across your goal, take up a better position for that, and then the reaction, it's, you know, I talk a lot about Aaron Ramsdale and just how athletic he is. Not a lot of goalkeepers have the athleticism that he has, and he's shown it here, the power to get up and the way in which his body contorts into all sorts of different shapes and movements and what have you. It's really, really impressive. Brilliant, brilliant save. And Ben, as you mentioned, Ben was kind of blocked in on the corner, couldn't come for the corner, but then he had the awareness when the header was then headed towards him, he had the awareness to take up a position where he was quite tall, I guess is what I'd use, where rather than taking your standard set position, he stood up really tall. His hands were that little bit higher in the set position. So he's done all this in a split second. And it was the fact that he was a bit taller and his hands were a little bit higher allowed him to react and get fingertips up onto the bar.
Just to finish in the Premier League and quickly touch on Alisson and Ederson. Chris Wood, clearly the latest player with Alissonitis in Liverpool's win at Newcastle. But Manchester City, 4-0. At Leeds United, just the third City goal. It started with a classic Ederson ping, 8 more touches and the ball's in the back of the net.
Yeah, brilliant. It's the power. Like, look, you see this ball play to the right wing. You'll see it quite a lot now in modern day football, and a lot of goalkeepers possess this, but a lot it will be a clip, and it could have been a clip. You clip it to the right wing, it would have got there, the player had plenty of time. So it wasn't necessarily the difficulty of getting the ball out to the right wing, it's just the pace at which he does it. He's drilled it and it's got there in a split second. And it's because of that that then, I don't know who the player was actually who received the ball, but it was because of that that he's then able to take a touch or two. Defence aren't anywhere near being set, which they would have been had it been a clip out to the right wing. So it is just that. It's just the precision and the pace at which he's able to fire the ball out to the right wing. And then, as you say, within a couple of touches, it's in the back of the net.
It is the EFL overview. Nearly finished with these now for the season. And yet again, we're going to start with one of these. Yes, the klaxon has sounded for Brice Samba, an assist for Nottingham Forest in their thrashing of Swansea City. Alex Myton getting on the end of this one. So I don't know what you think, whether this was an assist or not. I'm calling it an assist. Interestingly, the other end of the pitch, Andy Fisher, a series of decent saves, but it's just the way it goes, isn't it? Conceding 5 in that one. Murphy Mahoney, or Murphy Cooper, in for his full home debut at QPR, kept Sheffield United at bay for as long as he possibly could. Also back in, Kelleroos for Derby. A couple of decent saves, including a pen from Gary Medine. They beat Blackpool, and quick distribution from Dan Bentley that kick-started a 5-0 home win for Bristol City over Hull.
Yeah, a couple of great bits of distribution, as you've mentioned there. Certainly Dan Bentley. Just, you know, on the face of it, he's rolled it, but he's rolled it into midfield. He's rolled it into, must have been, and you can actually see the way in which he's actually put so much power into it, where it is one that he could throw it overarm, but that'll make it a little bit more difficult to control. So it's the awareness to bowl it underarm, but do it with such pace. He actually ends up sliding a good sort of 5 yards out of his box because of the power he's put into it. But as you say, within two, three passes, the ball's in the back of the net. So very good distribution there. Similarly, Brees Samba, yeah, I'm giving it as an assist. It's a lovely strike downfield. I mean, we talk about this a lot about, you know, sometimes when it is a pass and when it is just a kick downfield. This for me was a pass, a very good strike downfield, and a good finish as well. Andy Fisher felt for him. Just one of those days, again, we've all had them when you come up against a team like a Nottingham Forest at the moment, or, you know, Luton coming up against a Fulham. You know, you just suddenly come up against a team that are in red hot form, and there's only so much you can do. You made a series of saves. Is it a double save? I guess it wouldn't be a double save. There's too much of a gap between the two saves, but two excellent saves. One tip onto the bar with his left hand in the top left-hand corner, and then to recover a few seconds later to then make a brilliant save with his feet. I quite enjoy it because we watch it on Swansea City TV, and the commentary always makes me smile.
Some of that local or that personalised commentary for the teams is unbelievable, because they have an ex-player on as well, don't they, who perhaps isn't as experienced in the co-commentary position, so they don't really know, their timing's a little bit out, isn't it? And they'll just talk over the commentator, or they'll celebrate, or they'll groan and moan, and you think, just rein it in, fella, rein it in.
It's very funny. And the other one to mention, Kelleroos, credit to him, because he's been having to wait. Of course, Ryan Allsop's had an excellent season, but now with Derby being down, Kelleroos come in and thought he was excellent. Good penalty save, down low to his right, read the situation very well. Had the awkward moment when someone's come to hug him after making the penalty save, and they just stayed a little bit too long. You know, the hug just lasted a few seconds too long, and you could sense you were trying to push him off him. I mean,
That was the fella who'd given away the penalty.
Ah, that's why. I was going to say, I would struggle with that. I struggle with a hug at the best of times. So to have someone hug me for that period of time, I would have really struggled with that. That makes a really good save as well, low to his right from a deflected effort from memory. So look, big well done to Kelleroos as well. Of course, out of contract this summer, so it'll be interesting to see where he ends up next season.
And Murphy Mahoney, Murphy Cooper. I feel like I have to say both of his names every time. He needs to double barrel this, well, or either just pick one of them.
Yeah, he obviously wants it to be Murphy Cooper. So I think it will end up being that. Hopefully it ends up being that for his sake. But no, he was excellent. Again, it was always going to be a tough night. Going back to teams that have something to play for. QPR obviously don't at the moment. Sheffield United were dominant, certainly in the second half. Murphy made a couple of very good saves, one in particular to his right hand side. Speed of set, fully extended to his right hand side. Really explosive save. Was getting a lot of love, I know, from the QPR faithful. And he's done well. The two games he's played, he's certainly not looked nervous. He's looked very, very assured. And despite the fact that it's ended in a couple of defeats, he's certainly come out with a lot of plaudits.
Before we move on to League One, let's discuss Matty Ingram moving on loan to Luton Town, an emergency loan no less. And, wow, shipping 7 goals in his opening game last night against Fulham. Fulham going up as champions of the Championship. Aleksandar Mitrovic breaking all kinds of records in the process. A tough start for Matty Ingram, but an interesting situation just because Harry Eistead, who we spoke about at length in the podcast last week, he made his full home debut, his full Championship debut for Luton. They are potentially going into the playoffs, but they've plumped for the emergency loan and they brought Ingram in from Hull.
Yeah, which, you know, is understandable. They've got, you know, a big few weeks ahead. It's always harsh on the goalkeeper that's playing because, you know, Harry Eistead has been very good, stepped in and has looked very confident. I saw one of his games live against Cardiff when he came on. Obviously, that horrible injury, and I thought he looked very assured. And from what I hear, he was assured in the next game as well. So it is harsh. But, of course, Luton are looking at it. They're going into the playoffs. They maybe want someone that little bit more experienced. I say they're going into the playoffs. Of course, they've got a massive last day now. Because of this result, it hasn't done their goal difference any good. So they're going to need to pick up at least a point. I think maybe even a victory. I'd need to check the table. But, you know, so they've got a massive last day coming up. So I understand why they've done it. From Matt Ingram's point of view, it makes a bit of sense to be in the shop window, I guess you could say. And certainly there'll be a lot of publicity on these games if they do make the playoffs. So it does make sense. Hull will likely take his option. So I guess from Hull's point of view, they're going to get a bit of money back towards his wages over the next couple of weeks. So that's the bonus. Hopefully, if the goalkeeper goes and does well, then they're going to be have an asset on their hands that is that bit more valuable to them. So I do understand why and how it's happened. As I say, a little bit harsh on Harry Eisted, but for the reasons given, it does make sense. I suppose the only question I have, and it is what it is. They're always going to bring him in after Saturday's game. With their game being on the Monday, it worked perfectly that they could bring him in and he could play the last two games of the season. It's just always a tough one when your first game is away to Fulham, who are going to win the league, party atmosphere, you know, and they go a goal or two up. You kind of sensed at that moment it could end up being a bit of a drubbing, which it was. So my only worry, not necessarily for Matt Ingram himself, because I get the impression he's a very strong character and no doubt he'll be fine going into the final game of the season, but more so from the club's perspective, they've got all sorts of injuries, final game of the season, they need something, big pressure. It would just be really, really interesting to see how Luton react.
If you're Harry Eisted in that position, do you think he's looking at that? I mean, obviously he's gutted to not be playing, but do you think he's looked at it and thought, actually, I've dodged a bullet there?
Well, this is it because I think it's one of those where, in hindsight, and not a great deal Matt Ingram can do on any of the goals either. So in hindsight, whoever goes in there, it's going to be a tough day, and there's no goalkeeper that likes conceding, you know, let alone conceding seven and first time that you're out there playing. So yeah, I'm sure that for him it's a mixture of emotions, and it's just been a, you know, look like they've been incredibly unlucky in the same way that QPR have been incredibly unlucky. But of course, like we say it a lot, and this sometimes it can't be helped when there are enforced changes, but you look at the majority of teams that go on and have very successful seasons, i.e. Fulham, Bournemouth, Huddersfield, your top three, they've all got really consistent goalkeepers. Marek Rodak, from very early on in the season, has played the majority. Mark Travers has played, I think, every single one. Lee Nichols, team of the season, phenomenal season. Came in, I think, on game two, game three, and has played the majority of games. So ordinarily, you look at, and you could, you know, I'm sure there might be the odd example where that's not been the case, but teams that have won the Premier League, major leagues, they've done it with a goalkeeper that has played the majority of games and been very consistent. So it is difficult when you're having to chop and change, and unfortunately, it's not their fault. You know, they have been unlucky, Luton, with Jed Steer and Shea getting serious injuries, and they've been forced to chop and change, which will cause a bit of disruption.
Into League One, Christian Walton. A great save from Jaden Stockley as Ipswich finished in fine fettle with a big win over Charlton. Bolton Wanderers, quite the spawny goal of the week, we're going to give it, actually, in their win over Fleetwood Town. And elsewhere, I just thought it's worth mentioning Dimitar Mitov, 4 out of 5 end-of-season awards available at Cambridge United. A really good season for him, especially after coming back from an injury last season, 50 plus games too, had that big moment in Newcastle, so well done him. And also Matty Kovar, I think it's just worth mentioning, we haven't really had a chance to bring him up yet, of course had a difficult time on loan at Swindon, has come back in at Burton on loan from Manchester United, 6 games to finish off the season, 4 clean sheets in that time, his first 3 games all 0-0 draws.
Yeah, great stuff. And no, it's nice to see that. You know, you mentioned the spawny goal of the week, of course, Bolton scoring that goal. And there's another good example there of James Trafford, where, you know, it didn't really happen for him at Accrington, yet he goes to Bolton and he's been superb. And I feel like it's similar with Mateo Kovar. A lot of people, certainly, you know, when he did go to Swindon, there were certain people that were writing him off. And it is then difficult to then get that loan on the back of a loan that hasn't worked out overly well. Billy Crellin, I suppose, is another example where you get that first loan, didn't quite go to plan, and then we haven't seen a loan since. Obviously, he's at Everton now. I'm sure that next season he will get a loan of note in order to build again. But yeah, no, massive, massive credit to him, and really pleased to hear that. And as you say, a few talking points of note. That definitely spawny goal of the week. Very little Alex Cairns can do, certainly felt for him on that one. And in regards to Christian Walton, so I was actually at that game, and really good game, actually. Ipswich looked fantastic. I mentioned to Nathan Harness, made his debut for Charlton. Pleased to see that. Not a great deal he could do on the goals. Ipswich were ruthless on the day and looked very, very good. But certainly Christian Walton. And what's quite nice is you can just really sense the love that the Ipswich fans have for Christian Walton. They've really, really taken to him. And I know it was a big decision for him to choose to leave Brighton and go to League One with Ipswich, certainly given that he's played a lot of games in Championship, and no doubt had he waited till the summer, I'm sure he would have had Championship options. But there is something to be said when you're playing for a club that you know is going places and you do have that sort of feeling surrounding you. And just watching him, you could just sense, and every time he's making a save, catching a cross, there's such positivity. And I think going into next season with a Christian Walton playing in the form that he is, and with the team that Ipswich are building, they're certainly going to be one to look at next season.
And finishing in League Two, where Joe Cracknell is finishing off the season at Harrogate, helped them to a win at Forest Green Rovers, who are limping over the line in League Two, by the way. I know they're going up, but wow, not a great end to the season for them. Liam Roberts, a good end of the season for him. A good season as a whole for Liam Roberts, yet more heroics in the Northampton goal, one apiece with Exeter. Owen Foster, just 17 years old. Scunthorpe blooded the youngsters in their final home game of the season. They drew one apiece with Hartlepool. And sound that klaxon once more. Lawrence Vigouroux, an assist, a lovely little clip, arguably one of the best we've seen this season, I think, in terms of goalkeeper assists, because this, like you said with Samba, was purposeful. This was an actual assist, not just a lump up the pitch. He was looking for that striker. And Glamorris as well, although conceding there, did make a double penalty save, I'm going to call it. Not two penalties he saved, but saved the penalty and then the rebound. Love to see it.
Yeah, well, to start with that, and the term that I've seen used to describe him a few times over the past couple of days is quarterback, and it was that for any NFL fans out there, because it is that moment. He stepped into a position where he's between the two defenders. He's actually advanced, I believe, of the two defenders. So he stepped into that pocket like an NFL quarterback would do. And then it's that one where you see the wide receiver. The wide receiver's out on the right-hand side, would then cut in, and the quarterback would then throw it over into the channel and, you know, make the play. And it was essentially that. The guys then come in off the line, and he's just... And it is a clip. He can't drive this. If he drives this, it would go through to the goalkeeper. So he needs to have enough loft on it in order to get it over the defender, dink it into the striker, who, in fairness, takes a brilliant touch and a lovely finish. But the pass is just exceptional. It's by far the best pass of the weekend that I've seen. I'd even go and say that it is that little bit better than Edison's. As good as Edison's was out to the right winger, he had more margin for error, whereas with this, the trajectory was just absolutely perfect. The weight was perfect. And I think it's, you know, you watch it on camera and it looks so simple, but to fire a ball 70 yards with that sort of accuracy and to get the weight of the pass just right really was a thing of beauty. So yeah, big well done to him. And a few other moments you mentioned too. Great moment for Foster to come in and make his debut. Good touch onto the post in that one. And to talk about Glamorris, you know, another season for him, and just feels like he just keeps on going. You know, you feel at some point maybe someone's going to come in and challenge him and take his spot, but once again has seen the season out and seen it out in a very strong fashion. And I mentioned for Joe Cracknell as well, several very good saves, very good blocks, brave blocks in this one. Clean Sheet Club. Okay, we're nearly there. We're going to be announcing a winner very soon. It's time for this. And we start in the Premier League. Alisson, oh my gosh, I cannot believe it. Emi Martinez, gloves 11. Robert Sanchez, double figures. Edison, telegraphed. Jordan Pickford, 2-4 after 1-17. David De Gea, take him with you. Mark Travers, big save and a big win. Keller Roos, big save, even bigger grin. Dan Bentley finishing the season solidly. Bart Bierkowski, never out. David Button fastening up the Baggies' backline. Victor Johansson, all Swede and no sour. Christian Walton, secure in Suffolk. Anthony Patterson on the grid. Jamie Cumming, back-to-back. Ben Amos, ever-present champion. Lawrence Vigouroux, Vina del Marvelous. Joe Murphy, life begins.
Good stuff, Richard. Good stuff. Like you said, we are very nearly at the end. And the table, my word, the table, top of the pile. hanging on, you have to say, with one game to go in League Two is Liam Roberts on 21 clean sheets. But that blank for Alisson at the weekend at Newcastle means that he is now on 20, just one behind. And that's in 32 games, which is quite a remarkable effort. He's on course, isn't he, to equal that. Was it 24 from Petr Cech back in the Jose Mourinho days? Edison and Luke McGee both on 19 apiece. Edison in 33 and Luke McGee in 45. And then Lee Nichols, Mark Travers, Cam Dawson, Michael Cooper and David Stockdale all on 18. Of course, Cooper and Stockdale cannot get any more, but Lee Nichols and Mark Travers can. But of course, they can't usurp Mr. Roberts. So it looks like it's a straight shootout between Roberts, Alisson and Edison, all to play for.
Well, there you go. What a few weeks we have, Ed. I just hope it goes to that final day and that, look, I'm sure there will be something to play for in the Premier League. Get the feeling that it's going to go right to the wire between Liverpool and Man City. But from our point of view, a selfish point of view, for the clean sheet club to go to the final day as well would be very, very exciting.
It will indeed. Right, just to finish, a few more keeper capers, okay?
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
Firstly, Tatiana Saunders was a goal scorer for Lewis Women at the weekend. A 70-yard screamer. This was against Liverpool in the Women's Championship. Liverpool, who are going up as champions and had gone 20 games unbeaten, I believe. But a win for Lewis Women and a goal for Tatiana Saunders. What a strike.
Indeed. Lovely strike. Reminiscent of Paul Robinson against Ben Foster back in the day. Long strike upfield. And I think the Liverpool goalkeeper will hold her hands up. Just misjudged the bounce ever so slightly, and unfortunately it did go over her head and into the back of the goal. But a lovely strike.
Yeah, a lovely strike. I think you're right. I think questionable goalkeeping, to be fair, there wasn't. It was Charlotte Clark in goal. It's actually her first ever league start. Rachel Laws is the number one for Liverpool. She actually bagged the Golden Glove this season. But Charlotte Clark, that is a lesson learned, and I'm sure she'll come back stronger.
Yeah, it's a shame that something like that happens on your debut. I think, and that's one of the big things, I think, when it comes to Makey, that you're always hopeful that a few things go your way. You know, I've talked about my debut on here far too many times, and the fact that I had two or three things that I got lucky with effectively. So you are always hoping you get that little bit of luck. So yeah, not a particularly nice moment, but no doubt she will dust herself off, bounce back, I'm sure.
Over to Italy again in the Serie A. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because I kept reading online that howlers were occurring in Serie A. It kept popping up. Goalkeeper howler here, goalkeeper howler there. Everywhere there seemed to be a goalkeeping howler. So I thought, right, I'm going to have a look at these. And of the three that were mentioned, I'm saying one was, if you're going to say a proper howler, we don't really like to use that word, and say one was a big error. The other was one that we've tended to see quite a few times where the goalkeeper holds onto the ball for too long. And the other one was just a misplaced pass. I'm not calling that a goalkeeper howler. So the first, Andre Radu, that was for Inter Milan against Bologna. This was their game in hand. The other thing here is that all of these situations have directly affected the Serie A title race. So he was in for Handanovic and pretty much passed into his own net late on in their game with Bologna, their game in hand, in order to leapfrog AC Milan at the top of the table. They weren't able to do that because as a result of that goal, they lost away to Bologna. Then you had Alex Meret for Napoli at Empoli. That ended up being a 3-2 win for Empoli, which ended Napoli's faint title hopes. And then you had Pietro Taracciano, which gifted AC Milan victory against Fiorentina. That one was the misplaced pass to Rafael Leao. The problem being that Leao then continued to goal and scored past Taracciano.
It was a really, just a bizarre weekend. And I'd also, similar to you, I'd seen things pop up on social media, read a few bits and pieces. I said earlier in the show about Jordan Pickford and the saves that he make that, or the saves that he made, sorry, that if they do stay up, they'll become those iconic saves that you talk about, in the same way that we'll talk about, you know, the David Seaman, Pesky Salido, or, you know, Peter Schmeichel with several saves over the years that were very key at times. You kind of feel like that could end up taking on that sort of mantle. Similarly, in a negative sense, this could be the same here, in that it was a horrible one. The ball coming to Rad. And it's that one that for a start, the ball coming back to him there, you do wonder what they expect the goalkeeper to do with it, where he's having to sweep the ball across his body with his left foot to try and play it out to the right back. It is a very risky situation at the best of times. And of course, we're seeing this more and more, where goalkeepers are put under intense pressure pretty much on their goal line and expected to find solutions. And unfortunately, he just misplaced the pass. It's something that you'll see hundreds of times in any weekend in regards to outfield players. But of course, the repercussions are nowhere near as bad as this was. Unfortunately, just couldn't get anything on the ball. And as you say, it was then a simple tap-in. And similarly, the other two, one that seems to be a goal that we're seeing a lot, you know, Zach Steffen, obviously a couple of weeks ago we spoke of, where goalkeepers are getting closed down, just can't quite release it in time. And again, because of the pressure of having to try and find a solution, they're not just going long, they're trying to keep possession of the ball. We're going to see this more and more. I know some people have got a real issue with that. You hear a lot of commentators you know, suggesting that the ball should just be cleared, but yet you are seeing a lot of modern day managers looking to build this way with goalkeepers. And the last one, yeah, real frustrating one, in that he's just gone to clear it and it is just a misplaced pass. And it's one of them, we all have done it, and you always hope that when you've hit that misplaced pass that it doesn't end in a goal, because you know if it does, then of course all eyes are on you. On another day, you know, four times out of five this doesn't end in a goal and it's forgotten. But unfortunately, this was that moment where it did end up in a goal, and naturally there was some criticism that went his way.
Not a howler though, is it?
No, it's not. It's one that, you know, I'm sure he'd be honest and be disappointed with. And I think goalkeepers, you know, we're an honest bunch, and I think when we feel we could have done a bit more, we'd always say. And when it is a misplaced pass that then directly leads to a goal, you know, I remember a couple of goals in my career where I've done a very similar thing and it's ended up in the back of the net, and you're the first to hold your hands up and, you know, suggest that you could have done a little bit better. But I think, yeah, look, the term howler, I know no goalkeeper likes that term. I know that I've had conversations with things. Chris Kirkland in particular really dislikes that term. And I'm kind of with him in that, you know, what constitutes a howler? You know, it's if a misplaced pass is constituted as that, then again, we always talk about this, but then what about when the striker does miss the open goal that seemingly isn't described as anything overly bad? Normally it's described in much gentler terms. So yeah, personally, I'd like for us to eradicate that from the goalkeeping dictionary, but I've got a feeling it's here to stay.
And just to finish, a shout out to Karen Bardsley, who has decided to hang up her gloves. Of course, England and Manchester City goalkeeper, played in World Cups, played at the Euros, Olympics back in 2012, won that She Believes Cup in 2019, and multiple domestic honours too. She's decided to finally call it a day. I'm just going to read out her quotes because I thought they were quite Richard Lee-esque, as when you retired, Richard. She said, "When your body doesn't match what your mind wants to do, it's frustrating. The risk outweighed the rewards in terms of life after football. If I needed to go through another surgery like the ones I've been through, I don't think it would be good for me physically or psychologically."
Yeah, no, I can certainly relate. And I think a lot of ex-goalkeepers listening in will also be able to relate. And look, it's a, you know, it's a big thing. It feels like her name has just been synonymous with women's football for as long as I can remember, you know. So, yeah, no, when I did see the news, and it's nice that she's been able to put, you know, her thoughts out there as well. Certainly, no doubt, inspired a lot of young female goalkeepers that are coming through now. And, you know, we spoke a lot about sort of goalkeeping and how it's improved to the level that it's at now, and it's getting better and better all the time. And she's been a big reason for that, been a big inspiration for that.
It does feel like, doesn't it, that the inspirational guard of women's goalkeepers are now just starting to come to the end of their career, and it is that new wave who are coming through.
Yeah, it does. No, it does. Certainly, I know, obviously, Carly Telford, who we had on the podcast a couple of years back, I know she's now gone out to the States, which I would assume would be, you know, the last sort of few years of her career. So, yeah, no, you're right. It certainly does feel like that at the moment.
Lovely stuff. Just to finish, Karen Bardsley also said, "I always tried to be the best leader and goalkeeper I could be." I thought, no, that's not Richard Lee-esque, not at all. Nothing like him.
No, that's where we differ.
Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the sticks, keepers
away.